from KQED.
KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny. On Tuesday, Oakland's fire chief, Teresa Deloach-Reed, said there are no city records showing her department received complaints about the Ghost Ship warehouse, where 36 people died in a fire earlier this month, nor records that inspectors ever set foot in the building.
We are trying to answer the question how we can prevent this from happening again.
Coming up on Forum, we talk to artists and city officials about what they're doing in the wake of the fire to prevent another catastrophe. Join us for Forum. It's next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Over a dozen musicians performed at the Fox Theater in Oakland last night to a packed house in a fundraiser to honor the 36 people who died in a warehouse fire earlier this month. Many shared stories about working as struggling artists, living and performing in packed buildings like the Ghost House Warehouse. And the Ghost Ship fire was the deadliest structure fire in the United States in over a decade. While neighbors say they had complained about the cluttered artist living space, the Oakland fire chief said her department has no records of complaints. There are no records that inspectors ever set foot in the building, and in response to the fire, cities like San Francisco are increasing their spot inspections, while some Bay Area artist groups have hastened to bring their living spaces up to code before they face eviction. In this hour, we'll check in with artists and others on what changes are in place in the wake of the Ghost Ship fire. And joining us first is Mayor Libby Schaaf, joining us from Oakland. Mayor, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Michael.
Let me begin by just asking you if you can sketch for us what we know more now about what not only caused the fire, but what the status is of the investigation. And frankly, do we know anything more about accountability?
So we still do not have an official cause of the fire, but the fire department, with the support of ATF, are continuing to analyze the technical cause of the fire. We also have the district attorney investigating whose actions or inactions could be potentially responsible for criminal negligence or intentional wrongdoing. We also are bringing in outside experts, independent eyes that will conduct an after-action report. And that's an external independent panel of fire experts that evaluate the actual emergency response on the night of the fire. We are trying to be very transparent in our responses to the many questions about what systems the city had in place that may have prevented this or may have known about these conditions. And so as we are combing through and publicly making available these voluminous records, we're also holding media roundtables like we did earlier in the week with our fire chief, to not just produce these public records, but to make the experts available for in-depth questions from the media about those records, about our public systems.
When will you release the fire inspection records or other reports? What's the status of, is there a release date ahead?
There were no inspection records for the Prevention Bureau, and that's part of why we held a media roundtable so that the press could understand the systems that we have in place, the process by which the prevention inspections are conducted. At this point...
I'm sorry, Mayor Schaaf, I should have said the police records, the status of...
The next set of records that we will be releasing are going to be the police records. That's the next set that we're working on compiling. They are voluminous, and we want to be sure that we are thorough in producing them. The other work we're doing is just going through individual emails. We really know that the public is going to want a thorough explanation of who knew what when, and we also want to know that. We want to ensure that no city employee was negligent in their duties. And then we do want to provide the experts to answer all the in-depth questions. The other piece that's moving along that I think the public cares a lot about is the Fire Safety Task Force led by the National Fire Prevention Association, as well as our reconvening of our Artist Housing and Workspace Task Force. you know, poignantly, just hours before this fire took place, I welcomed a new employee into my office, the mayor's policy director for art spaces. She's the individual that actually led this task force over the last year and a half, and now is going to have as a full-time job kind of curating this critical conversation as we ensure that we not only review fire safety recommendations to ensure all investigation meets Oaklander standards for thoroughness, trustworthiness, and reflect the values and aspirations of our community, which values the arts so much.
I want to get into that with you, but before I do, are you going to increase the number of inspectors?
We are going into a budget process. Our, you know, approach to this has been one of thoughtfulness, of calm. We believe that being overreactive might only drive these underground spaces further underground. That is not going to make us safer.
I know. I think you've said publicly you don't want to make any hasty decisions or you don't want to have any witch hunts. But there have been many complaints since the fire of buildings with people living or working illegally. And in fact, some of the artists living in Oakland warehouses have already reported that they're getting eviction notices after the fire. So what would you say to the art community about their concerns?
We're going to continue to do the work that we've done where we respond to complaints. We also started last year a proactive safety inspection. It's not just our artist community that is vulnerable in this current housing crisis. We have many vulnerable communities that we care deeply about. And so we have started a proactive health and safety inspection program that we believe is being conducted in a way to avoid evictions, because that is a huge concern as well. Now, we did just strengthen our eviction protections. Now, Just Cause protections in Oakland apply to any unit that was built before 1996. That law just went into effect. We also increased our landlord fees so that we were able to beef up our staffing of our housing assistance center, as well as the legal clinics that we run, not just at City Hall, but also through Centro Legal de la Raza in the Fruitvale.
Is there going to be any amnesty for landlords to encourage people to report unsafe buildings?
It's important that people know that the city cannot and will not turn a blind eye to conditions that endanger life. However, we have a history of working with landlords to ensure that they bring up the conditions to a safe state. We've even worked with landlords to put, you know, a fire safety person on site while they are making those repairs. We don't want people displaced. And if people are displaced, they need to know their rights. The law requires that a tenant is paid relocation fees if they are displaced from their housing because of unsafe conditions. And that applies whether you are in legal housing or not. The city will even at times advance that relocation benefit if we cannot get it paid by the property owner. And then finally, we work with a season of sharing to even help people secure a security deposit or first and last month's rent to help move into new spaces. These are all things that we're doing to try and help this community through this unprecedented housing crisis, which impacts artists, but also impacts other vulnerable communities in Oakland.
I'd also like to, before we say goodbye to you, have you say something about this $1.7 million philanthropic grant, which may indeed really certainly help some of the people who have been affected by this tragedy and who are in the artistic community.
Government cannot do it alone, and we are trying to put things in place like the Artist Housing and Workspace Task Force, which really nurture public-private partnerships. And the $1.7 million is a philanthropic gift that we have been working on for a year and a half, whose announcement just was so poignant in light of this tragedy. recognizing that we have to get private resources on the table if we are going to make a dent in the impact of this affordability crisis and its threat to our incredible artist community here in Oakland. So that is the type of work we're going to continue to do. We're pleased that we've done this foundational work over this last year and a half, so that as community compassion pours out around this tragedy, we know that we have organizations and funds in place to put the generosity of our residents to work right away in a way where we should never have to choose between safety and preserving our artist community or housing security. We must preserve all these things. Of course, safety in life is above all, and we will never forget that. But we are not going to sacrifice these other things. We are going to fight as hard as we can to lift up all the aspects of Oakland and protect all of Oakland's residents.
And again, Libby Schaeff is mayor of Oakland, and thank you so much for joining us, Mayor Schaeff. Good to have you.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Let me tell you who else we have with us to talk about the aftermath of the Ghost Ship fire and what's next for Bay Area artists, regulations, safety, really many things that people continue to be concerned about, obviously, and will be concerned about. Alex Emsley here, reporter for KQED News, who, of course, has been on top of this story from the beginning. Alex, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
I also want to welcome David Keenan, who's here with us in studio, organizer of Omni Commons, an Oakland Artists Collective, and the DIY safety group. Welcome, David Keenan.
Thank you.
We'll also welcome Jonathan Yude, who is co-founder of San Francisco's Cell Space. They're a collaborative art center in the Mission, which recently closed. He also opened an organization in Oakland called Place for Sustainable Living, which stands for People Linking Art, Community, and Ecology, and teaches people about sustainable practices in urban environments. Welcome, Jonathan Yude.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And let me go to you, Alex, first. I mean, there's still these a number of underground warehouses, especially in an industrial area, full of old, empty factories in that district, buildings that artists are drawn to and are going to presumably continue to be drawn to.
Yeah, and there's been talk of that this, if you want to call it a culture or necessity to be in these spaces, has been around for a long time, but I think exacerbated by the housing crisis. So you're seeing more of these spaces and more people in individual spaces. We don't know at this point how many, if there's any interest in knowing, you know, how many spaces might be sort of underground, either living collectives or maybe just places where people are just working, as this Ghost Ship warehouse was sort of billed as on paper, where, you know, underground people were living there, parties were happening there.
And there's also artists concerned who are still living in places, want to keep those spaces open, want to keep them secure. What about the wave of evictions? I mean, Oakland has set itself in kind of a different frame than, say, well, Los Angeles, obviously, but also Richmond, San Francisco.
A wave of evictions in terms of, like, for-cause evictions on the state level, this housing crisis that we've been talking about for a long time. I mean, I might not be an expert on this, but I just think that it's been acknowledged that there is a lack of housing, and there's an incentive for property owners to evict so that they can raise rents, right?
And the art scene. City Hall has been, at least according to many, falling short on monitoring it, busy promoting, so the argument goes, Oakland as this Brooklyn of the West that's a great art scene, but not necessarily being as aware as it should be about violence and danger. About the dangers of fire, as opposed to Oakland in terms of the image that Oakland often has, which is a negative one of violence and danger.
I think that if you still had Mayor Libby Schaeff on the line or other Oakland city officials, they would say that there's always room for improvement in, you know, sort of monitoring or enforcing these kinds of things, fire code, et cetera. For anybody who spent some time in Oakland, there is an arts culture and entertainment culture there that is really thrilling and unique, I would say. Obviously, balancing safety, and that is something that the city is looking at now.
We didn't get a chance to ask the mayor, but there was a local emergency proclamation. It was ratified by the city council. Can you talk about what that is?
Well, it's a local legal apparatus that allows for some resources to be dedicated to this fire and potentially some reimbursement funds. responding to massive emergencies like this, it costs a lot of money. You're paying all of these emergency responder staffs over days and weeks to go through the scene, the investigative resources, et cetera. So it has something to do with that.
And again, Alex Emsley in studio with us as a reporter with KQED News. What's your response to what the mayor said about records and what they do and don't know about them?
Well, you know, I mean, the city has repeatedly committed to being transparent through this process. And in some ways, they have been. For instance, we know about inspections and complaints to the planning and building department, mostly because those records, at least going back, you know, 10 years and further, were publicly available through a web portal. You could look them up the morning of the fire. You didn't have to request those. What we're waiting for now are sort of a different type of public record, for instance, like police calls for service. There are strong indications that there were many, many calls about this property to the police department and at least one incident response from the fire department to either this building or the lot adjacent to it. What we're seeing through all of these different entities, the police department, the fire department, and the building department to some degree, is address confusion on this block between the neighboring lot and the warehouse where the ghost ship lived. Might have caused confusion about the records, but also about the response, right? If a building inspector is responding to a complaint about an illegal structure being built inside this property, but they're responding to the vacant lot next door, that, you know, sort of sows confusion in the process, right? And we've seen that in those records. I think police calls for service, computer-assisted dispatch reports and incident reports, these are all pretty easily accessible, right? Departments have an interest in having these records be easily accessible. So I'm not sure why the city hasn't been able to find them and release them yet.
Let me bring in our two other guests here, David Keenan and Jonathan Yude, who are here with us in studio. And I should say, first of all, that again, David Kuhn is the organizer of Omni Commons, an Oakland artist collective, and the DIY safety group. And David, you've been really working hard, at least to bring some things forward that need to be. You had a meeting on Wednesday, and let's talk about what came out of that.
Okay. First, I just want to clarify that Omni Commons is a community resource center that provides space for communities to meet and have events and, not just art, you know, and cultural production. It's a site for cultural and political production equally. It's not really an artist collective as such. It's just a community center, basically.
But you formed a safety group in the wake of the fire.
Yes, we did. That is a group that came out of the community, like the whole community, I think, that's affected, an extended community that was affected. It's way beyond something like Omni. A whole bunch of friend groups and affinity groups, you know, self-organized. We're put in touch with one another and effectively met there to do a few things. One of the really urgent things was to simply make spaces safe, which I'd like to point out that no one on the city side or any kind of, you know, enforcement side is doing, simply because of all of the fears of, you know, risks of, you know, being evicted or being cited for living, you know, in a commercial space that's not zoned for residential. Just fear around those things. So I've been spending like pretty much every other night, sometimes every night till 1 to 4 in the morning, going into spaces and just making them safe for like core life safety. And so that they don't get, you know, red tagged to the point where they're not allowed to habitate or work in there. Really just addressing those core things. And that's been something a lot of people, not just me, but a lot of people in the trades, totally beyond artists as such. This is a Oakland-wide concern. You know, I mean, much of Oakland is grieving. People have said a lot of things to this point, and I was really hoping to speak to a real big missing piece to all this, which is that there's a systemic issue. When everyone talks about why didn't these guys pull permits to build structures inside, when people say, why didn't they pull a special event permit and so forth, I know for a fact that this event was shopped to other venues and spaces that did have assembly fire permits, that did, you know, were cleared for life safety. But because of certain rules, for example, the special events permit form that you would normally need to have an event in a rental hall effectively says in big letters, no, you know, dancing is illegal in the city of Oakland from 1 to 9 a.m. So right there, you know, you're not going to be able to pull that permit. Any space that wants to be legitimate, you know, that isn't a proper venue, like already a nightclub with a cabaret license, which a lot of places aren't, you know, will immediately be like, oh, we can't host this because you want to have your event go from 12 to 4, you know? And, you know, I think that the kinds of hurdles, and I would say arbitrary, frankly, like bureaucratic logistical challenges to actually getting actually everything safe and like permitted as people expect hasn't really ever been discussed. I don't think anyone in the city council or the mayor's office has any idea of the hoops that you have to jump through to get any of those permits. And it's very, it's something that's
I'm glad you brought this up, because I think there is a great deal of bureaucracy and there's a great deal of difficulty and obstacles when it comes to getting but also you've been dealing with problems related to code and need for new protocols, and those seem to hover over this as well in a major way.
Absolutely, in a super major way. I mean, I think it's hard to know where to begin because there's so many interlocking issues, but just to pick one example, any tenant, in especially in commercial spaces, if they wanted to pull a building permit to build a structure like a loft, right, or a mezzanine or something, they would not be allowed, even if they had all the drawings and they had structural engineering calculations and all of the things that you would need, they would not be allowed to pull that permit without the landlord's approval. These are buildings, many of them, perhaps most of them, that aren't actually being taken care of. There's a quid pro quo between the landowner and people who are willing to live in effectively buildings that weren't made for living that already have tons of code violations before anyone moves in. So these are landlords that are not interested in having enforcement, not interested in having, you know what I mean, like building inspectors come and examining their buildings, regardless of what people build in there or what they do in there. And that prevents just right there, you know, even if someone had all of the capital and literacy with pulling just a building permit, like they would not be able to do it in most cases.
David, let me interrupt you because we are coming up on a break, and I'll get Jonathan Yudd into this. Jonathan Yudd, you said, and it kind of dovetails with some of the things we're hearing here from David Keenan, Oakland's really a dysfunctional city.
Well, I think historically it has, been coming up, short in, sort of the past 30 years. In the last 10 years, it's seen a renaissance, and with the scrutiny of the interested parties, it is sort of struggling to get legit. I believe that it was sort of a forgotten city like Detroit, and as a result, there's a lot of mishaps in bureaucracy. So I believe this is an example of wanting to become a world-class city. So that's one of the...
Well, I want to hear more from you about artists trying to work to comply with codes, which was brought up with David, but also what works, what doesn't work. You've got the historical perspective, and that's important. We're also going to talk with Councilman Gallo and with you, our listeners. In fact, let me invite you to join the program. If you have something you'd like to say about this, what's next for Bay Area artists, regulations, safety, what's up ahead. If you have questions or comments, we welcome your involvement in the program, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. That number is 866-733-6786. The number to call again, 866-733-6786, toll-free number. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we are talking about the Ghost Ship Fire, which was a warehouse fire in Oakland that killed 36 people. It was the deadliest structure fire in the United States in over a decade. And in response to the fire, other cities like San Francisco are increasing inspections, and some Bay Area artist collectives are trying to bring their living spaces up to code to fend off evictions. We're checking in on the Bay Area's creative spaces in the wake of the Ghost Ship Fire. And before we went to the break, we're going to hear from you, our listeners, too. But I want to go to Jonathan Yudd, who's here in studio, co-founder of San Francisco's Cell Space, which has provided a good deal of history and actually was illegal in the city of San Francisco for 17 years and then started as an underground movement and moved from illegitimacy to legitimacy. And that's the kind of trajectory that many people would like to see. Jonathan, let me just find out from you. I mean, because there's certainly an attempt to comply with codes now, but what works, what doesn't work? What does Oakland need to do from your perspective?
Well, there's a number of things that could be done. first of all, I think it's important to recognize that this is, you know, a sort of a regional issue. When the cell space closed and the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank bought the entire block and wanted to build exclusively luxury housing, we formed the Cultural Action Network, which was basically trying to and has continued to do is press for more inclusionary housing in any new development and also replacement of any industrial spaces. So as new development does happen, there is a precedent for replacing that space. So that's sort of like the lens from which I'm coming at this is important to recognize. So Oakland can do a number of things. You know, first off, amnesty has been talked about. It is something that's important for people to come forward. And anonymity right now in these meetings that I attended last night's meeting at the Omni Commons, a lot of people are afraid to out themselves and to publicly disclose where they're based. And so if there is a real, true anonymity and amnesty program, people will come forward. I think also another thing that would be important is, you know, for the city to allocate, you know, sort of resources for standard fire safety. Right now, there's huge fees to even get sprinklers installed. I mean, tens of thousands of dollars to get a hookup, a water hookup, a water main hookup, for instance, as well as, you know, sprinkler permits.
So essentially prohibitive.
Yeah, it is. And so if there's a way that we can streamline legislation, you know, there's San Francisco did respond this week with some, you know, ordinance that basically says that we stand with the artists and we're directing city departments to work with them. That's a start that Oakland can sort of take a cue from. Another thing is incentivizing landlords, you know, maybe giving them a property tax break or something to keep the residents in the buildings for the duration of the amnesty as, you know, code compliance is being taken care of. Safety audits currently are being performed by independent people in the community that have a concern around this. I mean, I was really touched by the number of contractors that were at this meeting at the Omni Commons last night that were offering their free advice and free work, whether it's electrical or structural, engineers, architects. They all were coming out of the woodwork.
People pitching in, really. Yeah,
yeah, it's an amazing thing.
It's
another thing that could happen is, you know, land trusting these spaces. Obviously, we're suffering from, you know, the speculative real estate market, which is the reason why a lot of these industrial spaces in San Francisco have been lost to development. And that will happen in Oakland if we're not careful. And this you know, the sort of the adverse effect of this fire is that people are like, well, that's a problem. I don't want to deal with it. I'm just going to evict you. And that is what we're seeing. We're seeing landlords who are unwilling to work with the existing residents. Lobot was an amazing 8 or 9 year historical queer and people of color art space that, you know, one visit from one official in the fire department or the city resulted in the landlord saying, I don't want to deal with this. This is too much of a hassle. You got to go. And they got evicted.
So. Jonathan Hewitt again here with us in studio as co-founder of San Francisco's Cell Space. We asked listeners, if you live or work in an artist community, have you changed your approach to safety because of the Ghost Ship fire, or has your landlord? And I just want to read a couple comments here before we go to Noel Gallo or your calls. Dawn writes, when considering how we got here, the landlords and city are not the only entities to carry the blame. Insurance companies and banks actually own and carry the property and do little required due diligence to inspect the properties at the time of coverage, property transfer, and refinancing. And Ada writes, the point is these places are dangerous to live in. The inspections are the first step in saving lives. The laws are there for a very good reason. Focus should be on upgrading the spaces for safety, not throwing people out on the streets or suing owners. Noel Gallo is Oakland City Council member from District 5. He's with us online now. And Councilman, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. And I really appreciate all the comments that are being made from the mayor down to our residents and professional artists that are involved in these developments daily. So I really value their input.
Well, we value hearing from you on what is going to be done now. I mean, where are the priorities? What's the triage?
Well, you know, one is clearly the city council has gone on record in terms of making sure that, you know, one is public safety is the number one concern. We do not want to evict the residents, and certainly, but we do want to work with the property owner that is ultimately responsible to make sure that whatever safety features need to be implemented, that they get done so without displacing or without elevating the rent on the current tenants that we currently have. So not only within our artist community, but the number of calls now I'm getting is for residents that are living in apartment complexes, other residential unions where there are illegal building to the home in the back. And, I mean, I have a good number of site visits I have already made personally dealing with the mold and other conditions that are really unsafe for the children and families that are living there.
I wonder what you say to a comment made from Assistant City Administrator Claudia Capio. Excuse me. She said there are no plans to send out, I'm not paraphrasing, I think this is almost a direct quote, an army of fire and building inspectors to canvas warehouses. And yet, you know, you have all these complaints coming in, and a lot of people say that's what needs to be done. It's being done more in San Francisco and Richmond along those lines.
No, you know, I think that's sure that's not a correct statement she made or a statement she made, but, you know, right now, the city council at the end of the day controls the budget, and certainly we have directed administration to come back to us in January with the information necessary, how many operations, warehouses, illegal calls, as well as personnel do we have, and secondly, what do we need to do to enhance the number of personnel to guarantee the safety of our families here in Oakland. And so that is coming to us, but then we begin the budget process. And we have already, many of us have agreed that we do need to increase the number of the fire marshals, inspectors, but at the same time, we want to keep our artist community here. We want to work with the property owner that perhaps, you know, did not follow all the safety codes or regulations, but we want to be able to work directly because the reality is there is a housing crisis in Oakland. I live in it where I see it, and my ultimate goal and responsibility as an elected official is to protect the residents that elected me, and that's my commitment to the city of Oakland and working with the artists, immigrant community, and those of us that have been here all our lives in the city of Oakland.
Councilman Gallo, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us on Forum this morning. And again, Noel Gallo is Oakland City Council member from District 5. I'm going to go to some of your phone calls. Let's begin. Jonathan from Oakland, you're on.
Hi, yeah. I'm a resident of Oakland, and I was recently living actually on International Boulevard in a residential unit. And I just wanted to speak to some of the inadequacies of the building department. My unit had some illegal stairs built onto the back, fire sprinklers painted over, expired fire extinguishers, poorly lit hallway, all, you know, many of the things that led to the dangerous situation that happened further down International. And I reported all of these to the city, and they basically trivialized my situation. I waited for months for these repairs to be made. They gave my landlord excessive leniency. I complained up to the city, the director of planning at the time, Rachel Flynn, who trivialized the situation. And I even met with Claudia Capio, who could not offer me any relief in my situation. I was eventually forced to move out of my unit.
You're hearing, thank you for that call, Jonathan. It's good to hear from you. A lot of this sort of thing, Alex Emsley, from Oakland residents?
Yeah, I think so. And I think Jonathan addressed this to some degree. Oakland has had several issues across sort of different topic areas where the city seems to be having growing pains, right? The sort of administration, the bodies aren't there to handle inspections and things that the city needs to do. But, you know, I go back to the Ghost Ship warehouse. Increasing the number of building inspectors, increasing the number of fire marshals might not have really made a difference because this building didn't fit into any bucket that would have put it into a place where it would have gotten an inspection. That's what I understand from the comments that the fire chief made the other day. There was no record of it, no permit, because no permit was ever pulled. It wasn't part of the city's commercial space inspection program because there was no business being operated out of it that was sort of on the books. So I'm not sure what the city is planning to do to sort of identify these spaces that aren't going to make themselves known any other way.
Let me go back, if I may, David Keenan, to you, because you'd expressed some concern about what Mayor Schaaf said about commercial space protections, and let's get on record what you think about that.
Yeah, I suspect that all of the things she's talking about tenant protections in general that have been taken thus far do not apply to any illegal dwelling in a commercial unit, period. You know, commercial leases are not like residential leases, and, you know, it's it's a totally different ballgame. You don't have the kind of tenant rights protections that you have if you're officially a resident. And furthermore, when you make a space habitable, right, you build it out so that you can actually live there in an empty warehouse, you're already essentially breaking the lease, because every commercial lease is you can't do illegal things in there. Like and building an illegal structure is illegal, places you immediately at the mercy of the landlord. So, you know, there's a number of things like that. And I just want to say, too, just to remind everyone that this is not just artists. There's families, you know, working class people all over forced to live in unconventional spaces. Per your comment, Alex, you know, houses, to my knowledge, don't get, you know, annual fire inspections for your home. And these are also often people's homes. So, you know, there's a lot of spaces that don't get regular fire inspection. The comment that the mayor made also about, you know, having someone from Fire Prevention Bureau on site at a building site all day to make sure that everything's built correctly, to me, maybe that's true. That beggars the imagination. These guys are totally overworked. They have way too much stuff to do. It's almost impossible to get a hold of them. And like it just doesn't compute for me that they would spend that resource on a single site. So.
All right, I want to get another caller on. And the caller's name is Talk. Do I have that right?
Yes, it's Talkahiro.
Okay, please join us.
Hi. So I just wanted to make a small correction in terms of a lot of the discourse around the fire. And I think one of the issues I find is that a lot of it has been framed around how artists need charity, that we need to basically provide for these people who are helpless or are victims. And one of the things I've noticed in my time working in a creative community, working as an artist, is that a lot of these people are entrepreneurs. They're business people. A lot of these spaces are shared by small startups, by other business people, craftsmen, woodworkers, people doing creative businesses. And the impact of this is that a lot of these crackdowns, a lot of this detention is also going to impact this kind of economic life. And I think it's really, for cities like Oakland and in the past San Francisco, these spaces were incubators, and they're really important to the economic life of these cities. For an example, I have a friend who is a social entrepreneur. He runs a business out of a converted storage space in Richmond, and now that space has basically shut down until the owners are trying to comply with the city of Richmond to make it safe as a working space. It's having impacts throughout the region, and it's impacting business people. And so people have to keep in mind that it's not just artists looking for handouts. We are all entrepreneurs. We're all small business people, and we need to protect the interests not just of them, but of the economic life.
Now, I appreciate your speaking out for the small business people who certainly figure into this, and thank you. But the artists have been a lot of the focus, and Jonathan Hewitt, I think just in numbers, that's understandable. Let me read a tweet and get your response, Jonathan. This is Stephanie, who writes, I used to live in an artist community. It was my only living option as a broke artist. We lived in fear of the government, more threatening than helpful. Starving artists don't have the financial means or ability to self-install sprinkler systems, but still need homes. It's a catch-22.
It is. Like I mentioned before, the cost-prohibitive nature of some of these permitting processes. The cell space that I was part of, a collective that founded in 1996, was underground, like you mentioned, for 17 years. But we were always making steps towards legitimacy. And
your rent was always being jacked up, too. So you had to move, right?
Well, when we finally did lose at the end of the 15-year lease, our rent went from $7,000 to about $20,000. And we just couldn't keep up with it. Thank you.
And I'll get some more of our callers on here. Here's Sharon joining us. Sharon, thanks for waiting.
Hi, this is Sharon Stoyer. I'm in San Francisco, and I work with Jonathan with both the Cultural Action Network and the Cultural Space Coalition. We've been trying to sit down with city officials and supervisors and trying to, I mean, this tragedy has brought other critical issues to life and to light. It's not a charity. Every dollar spent on the arts brings $7 back into the economy, so it's time for Bay Area city officials and tech to stop cannibalizing what makes this area so alluring to their employees. We need to start heavily forcing subsidies from tech to the arts. in order to keep artists and artists alive. And the housing impacts from these highly profitable businesses lured into San Francisco is we're seeing the tragedies of both this mass displacement of our cultural identity and our community, and in unsafe conditions. It's really time for tech to step up and for city to step up and require tech to step up and stop allowing illegal tech and luxury developments to displace our communities.
The comments you make, and thank you for them, Sharon, from San Francisco, I think go to the heart of a lot of what we're finding in Oakland. And Councilman Guy, I'd like to go back to you on this. I mean, how realistic are we talking about from her perspective?
Well, you know, it's been an issue that has not been addressed, overlooked, and I think it's going to take all of us coming together. And I'll give you another example that I'm doing here daily as we speak. All right, so we have the number of small businesses that were impacted by the fire, around the fire. We've identified 10 businesses that have actually been there, but the majority of businesses don't even have insurance to be there and to operate. So now how do we support those businesses to relocate and pay for their loss? But at the same time, I asked, all right, out of that ghost ship, how many businesses were in the facility that are being impacted that we can assist? And so I got a number of 25. So does that mean there are 25 artist groups or other groups inside the building, but where do I have record of their business license or certificate? So that question's under debate right now. They tell me it's 25, but nobody can clearly identify the 25 that we can assist for their loss. And so Oakland, you're right, Oakland needs to get his act together to make sure that our residents, especially the growing environment that we have here in Oakland that we need to maintain, stays in Oakland, but at the same time we have a set of rules that apply to everybody, especially the owners of properties that are here for an investment, and be able to protect our residents at the end of the day. So that's what we're engaged in right now. So I'm meeting with landlords and tenants and other individuals that are property owners that are allowing, like the gentleman said, on international, but not meeting the fire codes and building codes, and they knowingly are taking those actions and allowing people to live in unsafe conditions. So Oakland is right now, we're not turning our back on the issue, but we do have the engagement of communities across the city that are engaged in making Oakland a safer place to live.
Again, Councilmember Gallo is with District 5, is representing District 5 in Oakland, and I'm going to go to more of your calls. First, a tweet from Kristen, who says, my music practice space in a Richmond Bridge art space was shut down by the city immediately after the fire. Now I have no space to practice. Oakland had few music spaces. I'm very worried I won't find a space to work. This gets again to the heart of things, and I'm wondering, well, let me bring some more of our callers in, but Alex Emsley, you want to comment on that tweet?
Well, I have heard, and I think the other guests here have certainly probably heard more about this fear of I don't want to overuse a word, but a witch hunt of places that maybe they might be safe, but just for one small improvement or a permit or something would make them fine. Will just get shut down in sort of a knee-jerk reaction. But I do wonder if we're losing a little bit of something on the spectrum. I mean, from all the accounts, I was never in this warehouse before it burned, but from all the accounts I've heard of people who were, photographs of inside the space, it was extremely unsafe. And
it was
a total
fire trap. It was an accident waiting to happen. It was a tragedy waiting to happen.
Yeah, and I wonder where it falls on a spectrum of if there's many dozens of these other spaces around, are many of them very similar to that in the level of unsafety, or are many of them much more safe?
And I got an email from a listener who was just talking about the electrical wiring and how significant that is in this whole picture, and how there has to be much more education, and actually proposed a whole program on it, which I think is a good idea. But who do you, Jonathan, you were talking about foundation money. There are hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it's not necessarily going to the people who need it.
Well, I did mention that there's a gentleman who was involved with Ghost Ship, I think lived there, who made it his point to track all of the Ghost Ship fundraisers, because he really wanted to make sure that they lived up to their sort of their claims that this was going to sort of positively support people affected, and that includes direct affected and indirect affected. The indirect affected is all the other art warehouses that are threatened. Certainly those are all good causes to support. Some of them are questionable, and this we have a shared document with I believe 50 or 60 links to actual fundraisers. I do want to acknowledge that ultimately what I believe we need is some kind of cultural preservation act that then creates a fund that can be supported by every sort of philanthropic group, whether it's individuals and or actual foundations. But the tech industry, they moved here and they targeted the Bay Area because of its creative nature. And so I believe that they have a responsibility to contribute to this $1.7 million grant that the mayor spoke of and grow that to, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars so that we can actually secure spaces, make them safer, take them out of speculative hands, and create land trusts to make these a permanent fixture in our community.
David Keenan, let's have you add to this.
Yeah, I just want to say that as far as I know, as talking to a lot of people in this community on a daily basis, that none of the money that has been raised on the large funds is going anywhere to anyone, helping anyone right now, period. And that's because of transparency and like due diligence stuff where they're waiting for the next of kin list from the coroner's office and stuff like that before they
distribute. Forgive me, do you think that's going to follow through with this money that was raised at the Fox Theater last night? I mean, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars.
Yeah, Omni's not far from the Fox Theater. I have no idea who to get in contact with there, but I am going into spaces that right now need to make like real life safety improvements, and like people are paying out of pocket, and it's sort of crazy, and I don't blame anyone for this, but it's sort of crazy that, we can't get, $500, to outfit a place with exit signs and fire extinguishers that desperately needs it. That's happening.
Let me bring more callers in. I just want to read a comment first, though, because a listener writes, I was recently at the Oakland airport where I noticed brochures and promotional literature featuring the wonderful art scene in Oakland. What hypocrisy. A PR campaign that touts the thriving art scene to attract visitors when the dark reality is artists are forced to live in hovels, unheated, unsafe spaces, and risk their lives to stay in a place they love and contribute to, with the city looking the other way. Let me bring another caller in. Spike, that's you. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Spike Kahn, and I actually just developed a completely safe, nonprofit, low-market-rate art studio complex called the Pacific Felt Factory. And it is exactly what is the type of thing needed in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it came about because developers were required, when they took over spaces that had been art spaces, they were required as a community benefit to give back. And we fought the Beast on Bryant, which was the former Self Space, and the city could have done the work that we, the community, did, which is before issuing a conditional use permit to destroy what was there, they could have demanded that there be a bigger community benefit than they did. In the end, we got over $100 million worth of community benefits out of the developer by creating 40% of the space community housing and 22,000 square feet of the space art space and do-it-yourself type of maker space. But I wanted to point out that on January 3rd, we're having an event at Brava Theater to bring together any artists in the Bay Area who want to be trained by the fire department how to put out a fire with an extinguisher. We've got donation from Kitty Extinguishers. They're giving us 250 smoke alarms that we'll distribute to artists so that they can put them in their studios. We are going to have the fire department, who we cannot tell where we have our studio spaces illegally, or they'd have to go and investigate, but they'll be there the first hour to do a safety, of life safety type of training. Then they go away and we continue to organize for the types of laws that NYCLostTenants.org was able to do in New York that makes these live work lost legal after a certain amount of time. They're known. There's city planning codes that should be put in place.
Yeah, I hope you continue this good work, and I thank you for calling it to our attention. I have to bust in here because I want to get it. We have just a few minutes left here. It's some real criticism I mean, we don't really have answers on accountability, and we have a lot of questions that still remain, and we will certainly continue to follow. But there's been, and Alex, let me go to you, there's been a sense of pointing fingers of tacit approval by city leaders that nothing was done until something happened, and that that still is pretty much the status quo.
Yes.
I'm talking DIY spaces specifically, of course. Yeah.
Well, and specifically the warehouse at 1315 31st Avenue.
And specifically that warehouse, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, there was we started looking into this thinking, okay, there may have been, you know, some building complaints about this space. Let's see what there are. And this is, you know, within hours of the fire starting. And I have been very surprised at the level that it seems of people, former residents of the place, neighbors of the place, contacting all variations of different authorities who could have potentially intervened in this space. I mean, it's just
it's a long record.
It just blows you away.
Of people giving that testament. Yeah,
and so we don't know, you know, why that information wasn't shared. I think that that's something that Oakland is looking to improve in the future. If a police department gets some sort of idea that there's some sort of an illegal residency or illegal building going on, they're not building code enforcers. So how do they share that with the people who are?
Well, we'll continue to look into what can be done, what should be done, and also follow this story. Thanks to Alex Emsley, reporter for KQED News. Thanks for Mayor Schaff and to Councilman Gallo, and also to Jonathan Yutt and David Keenan. And thanks to you, our listeners. We would not be here without you, and we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. Hours repeated 10 to 11. Continue this discussion online, kqed.org/forum. Next hour, Book Hour.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.